without further ado, we'll crack on. I hope the talk won't be too long, so you have enough time for a pint afterwards or something. But yes, thank you everyone for coming. And again, thank you to the SAE and then Broadhead for the use of this fine facility, without which we struggle. So, now, I don't know how many of you have been wondering what this is going to be all about. You'll have to forgive my sort of Hobbit reference. I do like Peter Jackson's work, but I couldn't sort of call it Sampling Theory for Dummies, even though that's about as much as I can manage. I had to call it something else. So, I've pulled it from continuous to discrete and back again, because that's simply what we want to cover and what we do in sort of managing digital audio and sampling and reconstructing it. I'm not going to make too many assumptions about people's level of knowledge, so I'm going to try and keep it very basic. In the meeting notice, we said it would be mostly non-mathematical. It will be mostly non-mathematical, because I'm pretty bad at maths. And it gets quite complex as soon as you dig too deeply under the layers. So we'll try and keep it mostly non-mathematical. But firstly, when we talk about continuous waveforms, I'm just going to try and advance that slide, actually, if I can, because it's sort of a bit of text on there. But we exist in an entirely analog world. Our senses, our way of interacting with the world around us is analog. It's continuous. We hear continuous waveforms. We experience touch in a continuous way. Every sense that we have is based on, you know, a continuous manipulation of our, you know, sensory receptors and our, you know, our brain cells and our everything. So it's all continuous. But attempting to, I suppose, capture and manage continuous waveforms is kind of quite tricky. We've been doing it with analog tape recorders and vinyl records for years, but digital technology is pervasive. There's computers around that we can use to capture and manage and store data. So wouldn't it be nice to be able to store continuous waveforms as discrete blocks of data and discrete signals? So this is really how we're going to proceed with this. We're going to look at how we get from a continuous waveform to discrete blocks of data and then back to a continuous waveform again. So now this may look a little bit complex to people, but hopefully we'll try and break it down and it'll hopefully become clearer. What I'm trying to show here is that you start with a continuous input signal. So you treat this as like a functional block. For instance, if you've got your workbench, you've got a box there that does continuous waveforms and another box that deals with other continuous waveforms. You can connect a wire between your input and your output, and with any luck, you'll have exactly the same as what you started with. If you were to cut that wire and then put two more functional blocks down below those, one of them is going to be what's called an anti-aliasing filter. Now, I won't explain what that is right away, but we need one. Then connect that to something which we're going to call a reconstruction filter. And again, I won't explain that right now. But basically, you start, go to your anti-aliasing filter, over to your reconstruction filter, back to your output again. Now, you may notice on this diagram that there are some zones. So I've put some zones in. So this is the analog zone up here. All this sort of light blue is the analog zone. And this purple zone at the bottom is our digital zone. The dotted green is what I've called the continuous zone. And the dotted red
is what I've called the discrete zone. Now,
I can guess already that people that know a little bit about this may start scratching their heads. How can you have discrete analog signals? Well, it's a bit of a bone of contention for some people. Some people say, well, you just can't, it's a no, but I'll attempt to show that, yes, the effects of discrete sampling can apply also to analog signals. And hopefully I'll get away with it. So, our anti-aliasing filter, we can connect that straight to a reconstruction filter, all in the analog domain, and get our output signal back. This block here I've called a signal sampler. And what that is, it's driven by a clock, so you send a clock pulse to it, and it effectively switches your signal. Switches your signal from from the input signal to a zero. So I'll just try and draw that on the board so it makes a little bit more sense. I might have to take that off because that's going to get ugly. Let's do that. So here's our continuous waveform. Okay. And our signal sampler is driven by a regular clock pulse. Okay. So while that clock pulse is zero, our signal is zero. And then our signal comes up to one. Up to a value, then back down again. Zero. And there. Should have done that in the colour really, but and so on. Now I hope you can appreciate that if you were to try and analyse a waveform like that, you're going to have a lot of harmonics in it. I suspect most people here will know what happens when you create a square wave. You have an infinite number of harmonics in that square wave. Well, a similar thing happens here. If you were to try and create that particular waveform, you'd be looking at an infinite number of harmonics in that waveform. Now, I stress we're still in the analog domain. We're just dealing with a very ugly looking square wave. Okay? Now, the harmonic structure that you would see when you look at that waveform in the spectral domain is what we associate with digital aliasing. Okay? So, this is where this chappy comes in. Because one of the features of digital aliasing, which I hope I'll be able to show you today, is that digital aliasing is all about folding frequencies. So when you alias a signal, it will fold frequencies around half the sampling frequency and then the sampling frequency itself. So I'll show you a bit of that as well. So what I had in my notes actually is a better definition of continuous signal, so I'll just read those out. A continuous signal or a continuous time signal is a varying quantity whose domain, which is often time, is a continuum. That is, the function's domain is an uncountable set. And thank Wikipedia for that one. And a discrete signal or a discrete time signal is a time series consisting of a sequence of quantities. In other words, it is a time series that is a function over a domain of integers. Did you get that? I kind of don't entirely understand it all, but it's in there anyway, so. So anyway, we'll go back to our anti-aliasing filter and our signal sampler. Let's move on to the next slide, see if there's something interesting in there. Okay. So here's our original waveform. It's a continuous sine wave, and we're going to sample it. A little similar way to what we've done here. You can see here that if you imagine that to be an analog waveform, it's
a very ugly square wave with lots of impulses. And when we reconstruct our original waveform, we're effectively passing those impulses through what's called a reconstruction filter. Now, I mentioned to you that there are a lot of harmonics in this sequence here. Well, the reconstruction filter basically takes those harmonics and removes them. So it's a brick wall filter, and the impulse response of that brick wall filter is what we call a sync pulse. So I'll show you a sync pulse in a minute. But basically, if you take a sync pulse for every single one of these, this is what you get. You get a whole load of these little waveforms here. And in the circuit, you basically add them up and you get your original waveform back. So that reconstructed waveform is the sum of all of the sync pulses that have been instantiated by that sampled waveform. And that's the comparison. So that's your original waveform and your reconstructed waveform, which is kind of what we're looking for. Another example, something that's a little bit more complex. Again, sampled with the reconstruction impulses and our reconstructed waveform. So this is actually a sync pulse, and the sync pulse is, do we know about impulse responses of filters? So if you take a brick wall low pass filter and you send one sample through that filter, you'll get a pulse like this. Now, one of the fun things I've been playing with over the last couple of weeks in order to prepare for this is a little program called Audacity. I don't know, you probably know it, you may not know it, but it's my mouse gone. All right, there's. So it's a little sort of free audio tool. But one of the really neat things about Audacity is that it allows you to work with raw data. So where is my impulse response file? Okay. Get rid of that. Now, unfortunately, one of the things about Audacity is that it has a tendency to draw a straight line between samples. So when I show you Audacity things, you're going to see a lot of little triangles, which are going to be very annoying. But in reality, that sample there, which is kind of up there, is just a single pulse. Then there's another sample here, which is at zero, another zero, another zero. I couldn't work out a way of getting rid of that line and actually having samples as they are. So you're just going to have to just ignore that. So if we take that track and we duplicate it, down there, great. I'm going to equalize it. Ah, oh, they're over here, sorry, on the wrong screen. Okay. So over here I've got a brick wall filter that I've created, which is at 3 kilohertz. So I'm just going to filter that, and you'll notice that we've got a little sync pulse here, or half of it at least anyway. That's what happens when you put in a reconstruction filter for one sample. You get a series of these sync pulses, which then get added up to then form your reconstructed waveform. That. Yeah, this is something I found that when you're looking at the theory of sampling, your ideal reconstruction impulse is something called a Dirac impulse, which apparently is zero everywhere except at the sample point, and the sample itself is infinite, and the area under the curve is one. Is that right? You'll probably know. But yeah, it's That's your Dirac pulse, and you effectively apply a sequence of these pulses to your reconstruction filter to get your ideal impulse response and reconstruction. Now, let's move on. Yeah, so that's our that's what we've just seen. And this is another view of our sine wave being reconstructed by sync pulses. I did this in Apple Grapher, but it takes way too long to actually do it in real time. It takes about half an hour to plot that. So much memory in use. So, it might be a good time, actually, to chuck a quick video on, because this might be interesting. Let's see if we can find it. Reconstruction, here we go. Oh, anyway, don't know if you can see what you can see there, but as you we see the red waveform here. So this is basically a what's called a chirp. So it's increasing in frequency, and as the frequency gets closer and closer and closer to the sampling frequency, or half the sampling frequency, you'll notice that there's some aliasing coming in. And I'll try, if I can, stop it so we can actually show that. Pause. There we go. Jeepers. Play around with this thing's tricky. Okay. All right. So around here, the sampling frequency is well within the pass band. So we don't want to go above half the sampling frequency. Getting up towards here, it's getting close. You can start to see some deformation in the waveform. But here, up here, it's really getting deformed now. Now, can you see what's happening here? This sampling frequency in the background, this is where we're trying to sample and recreate our waveform. The recreated waveform is of a much, much lower frequency. So this is basically what we call aliasing. So the original frequency that we're putting into this system is just way too high to be reconstructed correctly. And it just sort of breaks down really at this point. Now, one of the other things I found about Audacity, which is I think is actually pretty cool, is that you can create the... let's get my mouse over here. Good. Let's grab a... this one. Keep changes. Okay. Alrighty. Here we go. So if we look at the frequency spectrum of this first waveform, it's not particularly interesting. We have to kind of go on a bit of a journey with this point, because I'm showing you stuff that's actually on a digital platform, but it's showing you how analog audio behaves when you chop it around. So this is the frequency analysis of that chirp. It's... this must be 505k, but it's obviously not. Anyway, let's see what goes. Let's see what happens. Now, if I was to take all of that audio and just eliminate all of the samples except for the first sample, the fourth sample, and so on, this is what you get. See those triangles appearing? They shouldn't be there. But here's our waveform at the top, okay? And I've basically just dumped this out as raw data, taken a Perl script, and I've chopped all of the samples down to zero except for the first multiples of four, effectively. And what that's effectively doing is it's taking the audio and it's resampling the audio. So it's not 48 kilohertz audio, which is this. If I was to kill every second sample, that would be 24 kilohertz audio. I'm killing samples 1, 2, 3, leaving 4, 5, 6, 7, leaving 8. So that's down to 12 kilohertz. So our Nyquist, what's called our Nyquist frequency, which is half the sampling frequency, is about 6 kilohertz. Now, let's just go into there a little bit more. Oh. So there's a sample, three samples at zero, another sample, three samples at zero, another sample, three samples at zero. So let's have a look at the spectrum of that and see what we can see. Oh, there you go. So there we see the effect of aliasing. Now, that those aliasing products stay with the digital audio when stay with sampled audio. So they're a feature of our digital world, effectively. And we have to come out of that digital zone into an analog zone and get rid of all this aliasing we can see here. And that's how we reconstruct our waveform. If I was to play that to you, let me just see if we can play that. I don't know how much you'll hear, but... Here's our original waveform. And this is the waveform that's been resampled. You can hear those high frequency components in there. Now, if I was doing this at, say, 96 kilohertz, my aliasing would be folded again and again and again. It would just keep on getting folded all the way up. Because I'm only working at 48 kilohertz, we can only see about three additional aliasing components in there. But that is effectively what you call digital aliasing. And the fact that you're folding sound around, this is our new sampling frequency here, 12 kilohertz. We're folding it around half the sampling frequency. The sampling frequency itself, and 3 over 2 the sampling frequency here, and so on and so on. To demonstrate how you would then reconstruct that, you can simply take a... let's get rid of that original one there, so we've only got this one to play with. And I'm going to apply an equalization curve. It's going to be 6 kilohertz brick wall filter, which I've just drawn on here. Now, a couple of interesting things happen. Firstly, we get our original waveform back. The other thing that's interesting, that one's supposed to happen. I'm going to do that. Oh, I know what that is. It's only 30 dBs. Let's drop it down to there, shall we? Spectrum. That's better. So, we've effectively now passed our sampled waveform through a reconstruction filter, and we're back to there, which sounds a bit better. The other thing that you'll note is that the waveform is actually a lot quieter than it was before. Now, that's something I've noticed. I don't know how that's dealt with when you're dealing with it in the analog domain, when you're building samplers, you probably know. But
Sample and hold. Once you sample it, you hold it for a while, and that increases the energy that you've got, and you've only got to get rid of the little square wave error.
Right. So that's in the reconstruction side of it. Cool.
And the sampling side as well.
And the sampling side as well.
If you hold the sample for long enough, that gives your converter that you've got in there enough time to actually make the measurement.
Right.
If you do it with an impulse, it's got to instantly give you the number, and most samplers can't do that.
Cool. Glad you're here, mate. Yeah. I knew there was some reason for it, but it's interesting to see the fact that the energy is just almost sort of decimated, really, because all that energy is gone.
What you've done is you've taken the area under the curve as the energy, and you've just taken a very nice, neat little slice of it, infinitely small, so you've got infinitely small energy under the curve, and therefore you haven't got the energy left. Mm. So you have to use the hold function.
Yeah, I have to update this slide, I think, put some sample and hold stuff in there. In the real world, with actual audio, for instance, with this, this is our good friend Clint Eastwood.
You could ask yourself a question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
So that's 48 kilohertz audio. And if we look at the spectrum of that, oh, that's not. Why am I hearing stuff that I'm not supposed to hear? Ah, because that samples. So that's turned on. Let's try that again. Oops, I'm a little scratching.
You could ask yourself a question.
That's a bit better. All right, so let's have a look at that, analyze that. Now, you'll notice here that there's a few little components down here. And if you remember, when we alias digital audio during sampling, everything folds over. But the other thing is, everything folds over this way as well. I'll just show you that in the presentation. Yeah, here we go. So there's our original spectrum, and we're sampling at 24 kilohertz there, folds over, sample at 12, it folds over twice. This is a component, say, in this bit of audio here. If we sample that without an anti-aliasing filter, that will fold down into the audible range. So this is the explanation, really, of an anti-aliasing filter. It stops any audio above half the sampling frequency from being sampled. So if we were to sample that waveform as is, that spectrum, it would simply fold down into here and become audible. That kind of led to some interesting experiments with Audacity over the last couple of days, where I'll show you in a minute, but you can actually hide audio in this range where you can't actually, I mean, most adults can't hear up here. But then you take it through that sort of little Perl script that I wrote with just knocking off half the samples, then put a filter in there, you can hear the audio again, because it's aliased it back into the audible range. And this is another view of sampling where you've got a rising tone or a chirp tone. Sample that, it's aliased up here. But if you sample it again, that's now being reflected into the audible range. That's another one of aliasing. I think we've done enough on that. Talked about analog reconstruction filters. Okay, so go back to Audacity Eastwood. Here we go. So if I'm going to sample this audio here, I've got to get rid of all of those components down there. So I put that through if I kind of didn't do that, I'll show you what I've got here.
You could ask yourself a question. Do I feel lucky?
So you can hear some aliasing in that.
You could ask yourself a question. Do I feel lucky?
This is the original with an anti-aliasing filter applied.
You could ask yourself a question. Do I feel lucky?
And there's the... So you can see that's now been pretty much chopped off at 6 kilohertz there. And again, if I sample sample that, there's our little triangles.
You could ask yourself a question. Do I feel lucky?
You'll hear the aliasing in it. You can see the aliasing here. Spectrum. There we go, that's a bit better. So you can see the folding of the waveform around half the sampling frequency and the sampling frequency itself. And again, we can reconstruct that by applying a brick wall filter. And we get back to where we were, which sounds like this.
You could ask yourself a question. Do I feel lucky?
And again, that's lower energy because it's not using sample and hold. Jeez, these are all outputs from Grapher. This is again a video that shows the reconstruction using sync pulses. Don't know if that's gonna. This wasn't the best one because it was all off centered a bit, but. Yeah, so you can see the aliasing hit there. It's not the best one. Now, what else did I prepare here? Oh, yeah, this one. So this was a... this was a similar one here where I think this was the one where we can see. Yes, here we go. So where you can basically, because of aliasing, you can hide audio. So you won't hear anything. Well, some people might hear something. Anyone hear that? No. If you then take those samples, I'll just demonstrate it for you, if I can at least anyway. Export selected audio, so you can save it out as raw audio. This is basically what we're doing. It's this bit of code says, let's count four samples, and if it's greater than zero, we'll just make the sample zero. Every fourth sample, we just dump out as it is. Get rid of that, and I won't do it because it'll be a pain. And so that's the resultant waveform, taking out each alternate sample, which you can then hear. So that's the effect of aliasing. So there's probably not too much more to cover. I mean, some of the things that can go wrong with sampling, one of them is non-linearity. I did have a Grapher app that shows this in animated format, but I can't get it going. So when your sampling circuit isn't entirely linear, you'll find that the input waveform here can be deformed. So this wave here, or this curve here, basically shows the non-linearity or potential non-linearity of a converter. So this is basically showing how one waveform maps onto the other and how one waveform can be deformed by a non-linear converter. Other things that can go wrong are quantization error. Quantization error deals with the effect of a sampling circuit that doesn't quite manage to measure correctly the waveform that it's trying to sample, and that introduces error into the signal. Now this is a very, very much overkilled version of this, but again with Audacity you can demonstrate that, say like a full resolution waveform, if you were to decimate that down to 4 bits and then look at the error, this is very similar to the type of quantization error you can get with a analog to digital converter that doesn't quite meet the waveform. This was something I mentioned earlier on as about square waves, but it's probably not that relevant anymore. But something that came out of the prep was this little video. Where is it? This one. So this basically shows a square wave being recreated from a number of harmonics, and as the number of harmonics increases, the resolution of the square wave gets more and more accurate. You can probably see that there.
What kind of a range are we talking about there in terms of
number of harmonics? I think that was up to 500 I put into the formula. The one thing I did notice on that particular one, it was on all of them, that was there was a this little, you probably know about what that is there. Is
it because you haven't got enough harmonics?
Is it really? Jeez, because that's just
you need an infinite number of harmonics.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah. It will eventually go away.
It will eventually go away.
Jeez. Yeah, ran out of time with those harmonics. It was like 500 was enough, and the computer was struggling with memory after that. So. Yeah. Wasn't about to do any more.
Of course, your square waves are the worst case situation.
Yes. Well, this shows you, I mean, just inside of Audacity again, it shows you how when you can band limit a square wave. And I did note that if you start to zoom in on the peaks and the troughs of the square wave, it sort of started to resemble a little bit like our sync reconstruction filter, or our reconstruction impulse again. Again, I wasn't quite sure why, but that was just an interesting observation.
It's responsive to the filter.
Yeah.
If you slow down the rate of rise and the rate of fall, then you get a better reconstruction with fewer harmonics.
Yeah. So, so back to where we started pretty much here. We've talked a bit about our analog zones, our digital zones, our discrete areas and our continuous areas. Dealing with a signal sampler, I mean, we haven't really talked much about ADCs and DACs, but really they're, as far as aliasing goes, and once you've got your signal sample and you've measured it, you then have data that you can store using conventional computing technology, I guess. Sample recovery again is effectively passing those impulses out of your DAC into the reconstruction filter. So I don't know that there's really much more to cover. I've said I'd keep it hopefully maths free. Managed to do that. I did have some maths in all of the grapher stuff, but I haven't kind of brought that stuff up because it takes an age to drag out onto the Mac, and
it's difficult to understand too.
It can be, yeah, it can be. But it's grapher seems to have been an interesting tool to try and simulate a lot of this stuff, and to build those videos. And a lot of this stuff here. It's a very good basic tool for so anyway, that's kind of about it really. Anyone got any sort of questions that they might have?
I'd like to know, like, regarding storing this information, you know, in these files,
yeah.
I mean, what I see is, where I find it complex is there's so many different formats of audio in the digital domain in terms of that. How are we going in the future? I mean, do we lose any of these formats? Like, we've lost the analog tape recorder. Let's say we recorded sound in a 16 track 20 years ago. We've got to recover it. Unless you've got a tape recorder with those heads and that configuration, we can't play that thing back.
No.
So where are we going with digital audio? Are we going to be able to actually, at 20 years' time, recover a file that was recorded in a format?
It's exactly the same problem with digital audio as it is with any other business that uses IT. We're no different. Businesses have the same issue.
Right.
I'm working on a project at the moment where we're recovering data back from 2007, and even 2007,
right.
They're having to dig out old versions of their enterprise backup product to try and access it, and the data files that we're retrieving have to have a specific version of a database,
yep.
so they can be mounted and recovered and queried.
Yep.
It's a prevalent problem, data formats, and audio is going to be no different. I think the simpler we keep things, the better. If people understand how formats work and the specifications for those formats are publicly available and readily available, then it'll be a lot easier in the future to recreate technology that can access legacy data. Because effectively, we're talking about data now. We're not talking about sound. It's going to be the same for pictures, video, sound, animation.
If you keep the audio in its original format as a WAV file or an AIFF file format, it's essentially raw data with a few blocks of header at the front.
Right.
So you can recover it with a hex editor. Just go in and pick out the ones and zeros,
yep.
chop the front off, put it into something like Audacity and put the header back on again and you can play it.
Yeah.
Right.
But you've still got the problem of how do you access the hard drive or the memory stick or the CD. If you go into any of the compression algorithms, then it's an absolute nightmare. You can't actually recover one stuff compressed with one algorithm with the other accurately,
right.
because they all have different properties and characteristics.
The other thing with WAV files is that there's any number of different sort of byte structures that you can get. You know, it might be 8-bit, it might be 16-bit, it might be 32-bit float, it might be big endian, little endian, signed, unsigned. I'm very much a proponent of open source and public domain software and having specifications that are non-proprietary. You know, if, for instance, the proprietary owner of a particular standard goes bust or goes under, then who owns it? Who owns that standard? And how do people access the information that's stored under that standard? Or under that product. I think we're not worried about it today, but we will be worried about it in 50 years, 100 years' time.
Or we'll wish that somebody worried about it.
Or we'll wish, yeah. we're getting off topic a bit, but if you look at the, even when I was a kid, my parents used to take photographs of me and my brothers and sisters and put them in photo albums. We don't do that anymore. We stick it on Flickr or Google or Facebook. So we're going to be the lost generation. There's going to be no photographs of us because they'll just all be gone. They'll be deleted on a hard drive somewhere and no one will know what we look like. Well, unless someone comes up with a solution to that problem. But, so, yes, what did I keep it short and sweet? Oh, yes.
Actually, just getting back to the blue wall theoretical stuff. You showed before that imperfect square wave.
Yeah.
Is the ocean. And you said that, you know, that was a result of approximating it to about a certain number of hundred.
Harmonics, yeah.
Is it, mathematically, another way to look at that, is it the case that it's looking at it at a square wave that's been put through a low pass task of some finite frequency and the filtering limbs, and the result is the imperfections.
Yes.
That's one way. The other way is to consider that when you truncate it, you truncate the seek pulses to the left or to the right at the transition.
Okay. Oh, and just by the way, the clarification of the term seek is
sine x on x.
Sine x on x. Right, thank you. Yeah. It was related to sine function.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sine x over x, isn't it? Which, in theory, is the ideal impulse response of a brick wall filter.
Mm-hmm.
It never really quite makes it, because if you look at a sync pulse, it's infinite. It's infinite before it starts, and infinite. Yeah, so I've only managed to draw, you know, but this carries on this way, and it carries on going that way as well.
And what you're doing with those transitions is you're truncating that at zero and chopping out the left half or the right half,
right,
which results in rigging, because that information is no longer available to you because you construct the transition.
I'm sure I have a video of it on here. I'm just trying to find it. Is it sync week or two? Oh, yeah, this is interesting. So this basically shows you the construction of a sine wave from sync pulses. And what I was doing here was just starting with nothing and just adding sync pulses in this direction.
And you can see the ringing at the end where the transition occurs.
Yeah. And you'll notice as this gets further and further away, the bells of the sine wave start to smooth out and it starts to look more like a sine wave. But it looks pretty ugly here, but it starts to look a lot better in the middle.
That is, in fact, your explanation for the ringing in the square wave.
Yeah.
So the parameter that's changing there is the quarter frequency?
It's just simply the number of sync pulses I'm using in the graph, yeah.
And whether you're truncated at the ends of them.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, you'll have to forgive me. My university lecturer, when he taught me this, was a little bit more eloquent than I've been. I'm sorry.
You've done well.
Well, I don't class myself as a lecturer, but I've kind of investigated this, and it kind of brought a lot of memories back from uni, which I'm pleased about because I probably ought to have known it, but it's taken a while to dig around and get familiar with it all again. But it's been interesting. Definitely very interesting. Anything else that we've missed out?
Can you go back to your original slide with the blocks on it?
Yeah, sure. I think it's this one, isn't it? That one.
That one.
Yeah.
The sample measurement, ADC, and the sample recovery are probably the most critical parts of the process because they're actually difficult. The sample measurement to get 16 bits requires 64,000 levels to be assessed in the time of that sample. So if you've got an instantaneous sample, there's not enough time to count up the numbers to get the right number. So in fact, what you've got to do to get the accuracy is to, when you sample the signal, hold it for the sample period so that you've got your sample measurement time for it to actually count through the numbers, or you've got to run the sample clock much higher and do a single bit sample, and where you've got a counter that actually tracks the sample at 2.5 megabits or something of that sort. And with the reconstruction sample recovery, again, because of that effect that Mark showed of the energy being lowered, you've got a bit, if you just display that number on the screen for the duration of the sample. In the digital domain, it's actually easier to hold it because you just hold that number until the next number comes along. And then you filter out the square wave bits of the errors and you get back to the original filter without much loss of energy. But there are any number of ways that you can handle those 16 bits or 20 bits or whatever you're working with to produce an analog output. And the accuracy there depends on the accuracy of the analog amplifier at the end of that reconstruction circuit.
So I think what you're talking about there is a ramp-based ADC, isn't it? So basically just sort of counts up, gets to their call next time
it goes. Yeah, if you use one, it's got to be very fast though.
Yeah.
For a good
I didn't really cover ABCs much in this, but as you'll probably know, there's lots of different types of ABC, analog digital converter. So I think there's a flash ABC.
Which is 64 bits.
64 bits, yeah. There's a ramp converter, so it basically starts from zero, and every time it sees a sample, it counts up and compares the level and says, have I got to the right level or not yet?
Which works for low frequencies, but not for high frequencies.
No. This is running out of ink. Here it is. I think my favourite one, my favourite type of sampling system. And I'll see if I can draw it for you from memory. It's called a tracking analog to digital converter. So you basically send your signal or sample in to a comparator. The other side of the comparator comes from a digital to analog converter. Sounds a bit strange because this is actually an analog to digital converter, but hey, it's a DAC. On the other side of the DAC is a counter. And your comparator tells your counter whether to go up or down. And it's driven by a clock. So you've got clock pulses going into the counter to say count in a direction, in a particular direction. So if our signal is looking like this, and our counter starts at say zero, the comparator value is going to be here, and the DAC value is going to be down here, so it's going to say count up. So it's going to count up. It's going to get to here. And it's going to say, okay, we're at the right level. Cool. It's going to go up, and it's going to say count down. So what happens is you get a tracking pulse like this. So when your input signal is lower than the tracking signal, it's going to count in one direction. If it's higher, it's going to count in the other direction. And you basically read the sample from there. Is that right?
It's also called a delta sigma modulator.
Is that the delta sigma as well? Is it?
Yeah. So instead of using the counter and the DAC, they use an integrator, just the same thing effectively, and then count up.
But the interesting thing about aliasing, though, is that aliasing still applies because you still got to reconstruct it.
The analog devices, chips that are coming out at the moment, use pretty much that circuit.
Tracking.
The frequency is about 2.1 megahertz.
Oh, right, okay.
Which is why they get the nice smooth thing, because they filter the 2 megahertz out, it's nice and easy.
Right. I haven't looked at those yet, so. Cool. Well, thanks for coming, guys. I hope I haven't sort of bored you silly or anything like that, but it's. Yeah, it's been an interesting.
Can I thank you for a very informative talk. It was putting a whole lot of concepts together in a way that was very easily understandable.
I've had to try and relearn it again myself. So hopefully I've managed to sort of bring you guys on the same journey that I went through over the last sort of few weeks. And it's been interesting.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Thank you.